Next item on the agenda, amendments to Regulation 4VAC pertaining to 4VAC 20-755-10 pertaining to artificial reefs to incorporate additional artificial reef sites to be reserved for recreational fishing only. Mr. Meyer, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Gentlemen, as stated, it's a public hearing to amend the referenced regulation. The purpose of this regulation is to prohibit certain types of gear, commercial gear, fishing gear, and artificial reef sites, which causes conflicts with other users as well as presents potential entanglement with the reef structure itself. The two primary things we're trying to do here is to update this regulation as new artificial reef sites have been added since the effective date, which was October 30th, 2000, as well as re-specify the delineations of certain artificial reefs. We have a handful of reefs that were originally circular in configuration. Now, as a result of the permitting process, we've squared them off to make them a little bit easier for monitoring purposes. And with your permission here, I would like to go ahead and very briefly delineate what reef sites have been added as well as what sites have been changed.
All right, sir.
Asphalt Pile Reef is a new reef off of Lancaster County. Mobjack Bay Reef, near the mouth of Mobjack Bay. Danduapungatig off the eastern shore off Milby's Point. Pocosin Reef, artificial reef site located in Chesapeake Bay east of Goodwin Island. Windmill Point, 1.45 nautical miles north of Windmill Point Light. York Spit Reef, located east-northeast, 7.35 nautical miles east-northeast of Two Point. The artificial reefs that were originally circular and through the permitting process have been changed ever so slightly in configuration to square shapes of the cell off the mouth of Hunger's Creek, Northampton County. Cherry Stone Reef, 2.2 miles west of Savage Neck, Northampton County. Excuse me. Gwynns Island Reef, 1.2 nautical miles east of the southern end of Gwynns Island, Matthews County. And Northern Neck Reef, 7 nautical miles east of the Great Wicomico River Light. What we did was that reef is still trapezoidal in shape. It was originally laid out using Loran lines. And what we did was true it up ever so slightly. No increase in the reef site was realized from doing so. And what I'm doing here today is asking you folks to authorize the referenced amendments to this regulation.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions of Mike? Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
To open the public hearing at the present time, is there anyone in the public that would like to speak to this regulation amendment? Kelly? Come forward, sir. Good afternoon, Mr. Place. How are you?
Good afternoon, Kelly Place, commercial fisherman. I'd like to see a little clearer delineation of the reefs that are going to be, whose boundaries are going to be changed. The ones that were circular in nature originally and are now going to be squared off, I guess I'm assuming that's an increase in the amount of area that will be put off limits for anyone but recreational fishing. And I may be wrong about that, but I'm assuming that when you square that up, the corners and the other areas will be additional areas. So I'd like, if possible, staff to quantify the amount of additional area that will now be incorporated into those reefs. And a second question I have, too, I'm a bit unclear on exactly what congruities, I guess, are trying to be achieved on these, on the reef laws that aren't in congruence with the laws we have now. In other words, I understand there's certain gear that are allowed on some of these reefs that they would like to have not allowed, just like the other recreational reefs. I guess my concern is, say, a reef like the Cell, mm-hmm. an area that's always been open to all sectors of user groups. I'm concerned that because some recreational, I don't know, and it may be the Cell Reef may be different than the Cell itself, which has been a fishing spot for many people for many years, but I am concerned that taking a popular spot, whether for recreational, commercial, or hopefully for everyone to use, and putting some amount of recreational money on it is simply gobbling up large areas of bottom and will basically consign the commercial fishing to fishing in what's called dead water. If you put fishing attracting devices all over a commercial area, at some point what's left for commercial fishing will be, by definition, far less productive. In other words, it's a change. All these reefs and all the things we decide to do at the bottom are changes. That leads me to another concern that I haven't seen any environmental impact statements on this. I understand there, I've been told there are some, but I've never, despite repeated requests, been able to get any documentation. I would like to see some sort of impact analysis on these changes that are being made. I don't know whether it's appropriate to ask the commission to delay a vote on this, but I do think that those questions are legitimate things that we should have answers to. What is the quantitative amount of additional area to be put off limits? Are some of these reefs that right now allow multiple gears, are they going to be changed, obviously, by this regulation? And if so, what's the rationale for those changes? If it's gear conflict, I could understand why you don't want gill nets or whatever on a recreational reef. But I don't understand why commercial hook and line is a gear conflict, that a gear that's been used in many places for many years, and I don't see the gear conflict between those.
Okay, let me see if I can get some answers for you. Mike, can you respond to that, please? Those three inquiries, or at least two, and then I'll go to Jack for the environmental impact aspect.
The majority of them, yes, I can. For example, the Sell Reef, that reef site, that's been a recreational fishing reef site since, I believe, 1988.
Okay.
And when the original regulation was done in 2000, the Sell and all the older reef sites, such as Gwynn's Island, et cetera, were covered under the original regulation, the original version of it.
I think the question was the Sell as we know it, the degaussing Sell.
Mm-hmm.
Is the reef there a piece of that entire area known as the Sell, or does that off-site location encompass the entire Sell as it's known?
It encompasses a good bit of the structure that's always been known as the Sell. That was one thing that we discussed when we permitted the site with the Coast Guard, and as to whether or not we wanted the Sell structure as part of the reef or not, and because it was structure, we were allowed to permit it literally on the border of the reef site.
Okay. How much are we adding or otherwise impacting of turning a circle into a square?
All right. If you visualize a circular reef pattern, what I did was I took the eastern and western boundaries, ran them true north, ran the northern and southern boundaries east and west. I don't have an acreage figure in terms of increase. There is an increase. My guess would be is it's on the order of 5% or less. It's just basically
mathematical equation of the size of that added on the
right.
Thank you, Ms. Powers.
It cleared it right up.
Sure did.
3.174 square foot. We're looking for quantification on the additional bottom.
Like I just said, I don't have
a
figure.
I don't have
a figure right now, but it can certainly be calculated. I'd be happy to provide that.
The question pertaining to the environmental impact statement, do you want to address it, Mike? Or
yes.
I don't know. Well, I've never seen one done during.
And we haven't. None was required by EPA or the Army Corps of Engineers. Initially, Kelly is right. Many years ago, before I came with the agency, when we started building larger scale reefs, and what I mean by larger scale was concerning the project sinking the Liberty ships, 417-foot vessel hulls, there was an environmental impact statement done for the Triangle Reef site. And that was done per requirement by EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers. And with experience ongoing up and down the east and the Gulf Coasts, with artificial reef development. Artificial reef impact statements for the development of artificial reefs are generally not required unless it's something like a vessel.
So what you're saying is under NEPA right now, we wouldn't be required to do an environmental impact study on this?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. All right.
I know there are a lot of different interpretations to these laws. I would beg to differ on whether an environmental impact study would be required. You may remember at the last artificial reef controversy, the Bluefish Rock Reef, I was concerned of toxic substances on some of the materials that were put in there.
I had a discussion.
Specifically, that was the polyaromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs, that I'd found were coating some of the structures that had been offered. Mr. Myers told us, and I trust him on this, I think, that that debris was turned down. However, further inquiries I've made, and I've only made a few, I've got a lot of other things I'm doing, but I would like an assessment on what materials were included in the reefs that have been built since the beginning of this program, because my information, and admittedly it's very spotty right now because I haven't had time to pursue all this, my information is that there are a lot of things that really shouldn't be put in the water. Everything from endocrine disrupting chemicals, well, the whole gamut of emerging contaminants that EPA is concerned with and are affecting fish and other marine flora and fauna, reproductive health and other things in a lot of different ways. One last thing on, say, a reef such as the Cell, and I don't think that these circular reefs, when you square them off, it's more than a 5% increase in area. I think it's significantly more. But I've noticed that these areas that had been put in the public domain for all these years, if some percentage, some portion of the recreational money is put there, and then it serves as a rationale to turn the whole place over to one user group. Ever since House Bill 792 and 789 with the commercial registration and the recreational license was passed and implemented in 1993, I have concerns what some of the monies that have been generated by the respective licenses, I've got concerns that some of the monies aren't really being used for what was described to the legislature when they passed that legislation. Specifically, I would suggest that some of the money from the commercial board, perhaps we could participate in these reef structures, or at least some of them, and I don't want to see any gear conflict started, but maybe if some of our money, which seems to be used in a much different fashion than recreational money, were to be used to pay for some of the rubble or the deployment thereof, perhaps we wouldn't be continually pushed out of areas that I really don't think that we should be. So I would question I don't want to say the propriety, but I would question the rationale behind some of the use of some of the money, because I don't think it was what was intended in House Bill 788, 789, and 792 back in the 92 session of the General Assembly. Thanks.
Mike, just for the record, can you do me a favor and comment on the certification program of the items that go overboard, just for the record, please?
I sure can. In one respect, Kelly is exactly right. When I first started doing this 32 years ago, when we sank our Liberty ships, we basically took various types of Liberty ships, cargo carriers as well as floating machine shops, cut them down to the second deck level, gutted them, took them out, and sank them. Our primary concerns at that point in time were floatables, petrochemicals, and asbestos. Now, 30 years later, when you sink a commercial ship or a military vessel, you've got to worry with a great deal more of a mixture of toxic compounds. Primary among them is PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls. It was a compound that was developed in the late 20s, and it's been used in many, many things. On board ships, it's used in insulation on wiring. It keeps it from cracking. It's used in paint, because when they paint the ships, the PCBs help the paint spread more evenly and dry faster. And it's also used in electrical devices like transformers, transformer oils. It keeps them from overheating. Back when we sunk our Liberty ships, those things just were not on the plate. They just weren't. But the other side of it is that our ships were totally gutted, too. There was no propulsion equipment left in them. They were basically large canoe-shaped hulls. In terms of other materials that have been put on the reef site, I believe Kelly is referring to last summer where we had some materials from the West Point bridges. Both bridges had coatings on them to preserve the concrete. Both times we had chemical samples taken of those coatings, and they were transferred to EPA for analysis. The Lord Delaware Bridge, EPA and the Corps of Engineers said was fine. Go ahead and put it in. The coatings on the Eltham Bridge were turned down by EPA. They said no, some of the substances were present in higher quantities, so we didn't take that material.
Okay. All right, thank you. Okay, Kelly.
I'm not going to belabor those points that have been made, but I did want to point out that as far as emerging contaminants and their ramifications for health, fish health and reproduction, that not only PCBs and many other contaminants that we've known about but haven't tested for in these structures, but as say the polyaromatic hydrocarbons, the PAHs, besides having various carcinogenic and other detrimental effects, they have the endocrine disrupting effect. And we're seeing things like that in the Potomac. The bass, the male bass have female organs and vice versa. And I think that we should amp up our concern and our oversight over these materials, because the synergistic effects that are created when you take various things like PAHs are far more than their effects in and of just by themselves. And I think that many of our problems, we've got a lot of them, and they all work synergistically in a negative sort of way, but I think that a lot of our marine fauna reproduction problems that we have in the bay are largely as a result of the biochemical changes that we're creating in the water, water chemical and biochemical changes in these organisms. And we're putting these materials in an area to attract fish to them. And I'll give you one example, since someone mentioned the offshore drilling. If you measure the anglers around the oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, you find elevated mercury levels dramatically higher than anglers from anywhere else and far higher than the population at large. And one example of that, the reason for that, is the barium mud that they use for lubricating in this drilling has a high mercury content. And the mercury that hangs around these structures, they, like any artificial reef, it attracts fish. The microorganisms and all the lower parts of the food chain assimilate that mercury, or in this case PAHs, and it rapidly bioaccumulates up the food chain, and we're creating these hot spots. And that's so I would encourage you to amp up the oversight of the materials that we're putting in fish attracting structures, because those materials are bioaccumulating in us and our children.
Thank you, Kelly. Anyone else? Tom, then Doug.
Fortunately, I don't need to debate about the biomechanics or what's going down there, because that's not what's before you today. What's before you today is codifying something that you went through every time this commission has approved one of these reef sites. Every time the issue, one of the big issues has been the concept that the commercial fishermen are concerned about bottom going away. That is why on these last two that went through, the Coastal River Reef and the reef at Bluefish Rock, the sites were selected by the commercial watermen, and the recreational fishermen did agree to those sites. So what you're approving now, and that I would support approving and encourage you to, is just a codification so that we can have the issue of gear conflict on these reefs done away with. These reefs are funded not only by, the reef program is not only funded by recreational license money, it's funded by gas tax money, which voters pay and get a refund on.
Since you're much wiser at math than I am, can you tell me what the increase?
27%.
If you
went from a straight circle to a square. In Mike's defense, many of these reefs have structure that's out near the edge of the circle. It would be a major deal to try to figure out how
right.
to do a rectangular enforceable structure.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Jenkins?
Thank you, Commission Bowman. Doug Jenkins, representing Twin River Watermen Association. I'll be very brief because I know y'all having a long, tiring day. My concern is about the reefs in general and how many we're going to have in the bay. Some point or another, you got to stop this because...
We've had that. Jack and I had that discussion last week, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Very timely.
That's my concern. The other thing is, and Tom mentioned it, some of these are paid by revenues from gas tax. Commercial fishermen pay that gas tax. We burn very much of it. We stay with that for days and weeks at a time burning it. So what I'm saying is we help them to pay for something we don't want. And that doesn't go too well either. So I think you're going to have to put a cap on this in the near future. And if y'all have discussed that already, I'm not going to waste your time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
My name is Charles Dryden from Pocosin, and I'm a commercial fisherman, and I was in the process of putting this reef in Pocosin, and I'm not going to waste your time either. But when we set this reef here and everybody got together and I talked to Rob, he was supposed to call us if any regulations were going to be set on this to explain to us what was going on. And nobody's ever got a phone call about any regulation process or anything like that until today.
Okay.
And that's the only time that anybody's heard it.
Thank you, Mr. Dryden. Mr. O'Reilly? Anything? Okay, thank you.
If that was I don't recall that.
No, I'm sorry. The gentleman talking to me.
Oh, Mike.
I'm still up for sainthood.
Oh, good. Okay. Okay. Not Mike.
As you folks will recall, and as I think I've reported previously, when we tried to get the or work together to get the Pocosin Reef and the Bluefish Rock Reef, one of the things that was asked about at the meetings, and I don't remember who asked the question, but it was asked several times, will these be added to the lists under the regulation of prohibited commercial fishing? And the answer was yes. Now, in response to his remark, he is correct. I didn't call anybody up this particular time and said that we are actually adding the reef sites to the regulation.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? Matters before the commission for discussion. Yes, sir.
I have a question for Mike.
Mike? Mr. Bowden.
How many Ryan reefs are you predicting to make square?
What we did, well, we've got maybe one more reef site, which would be Back River. And there were a couple of reasons that we squared them off. One was that making sonar tracks, if you had a lat line, or if you had a line of latitude here, here, longitude and longitude, it's much easier running your tracks and hitting points on an arc. It's just a lot easier to figure it. Plus, the Corps of Engineers, as we re-permitted these sites over the years, asked us to be a little bit more straightforward in terms of delineation. They felt it was cleaner if we had a box versus a circle.
I wasn't really interested. That's a good response, but not to the question that I had.
Okay, let me try again.
The question I had was, how many Ryan reefs now are you proposing to square off? If it's a 20% addition for each reef, 27%, are we talking one reef? Or are we talking five reefs?
We have the four reefs that I listed on the regulation. They were squared off good number of years ago, back in the 90s. The only one that I can recall immediately that could be a potential candidate for being squared off would be Back River.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any further questions from the commission? Matters before the commission for action. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we adopt staff recommendation of the proposed amendments.
Second to the motion.
Second.
Second by Mr. Holland. Further discussion? Yes. Mr. Bowden.
I feel like Mr. Jenkins does. You know, when is enough enough? I didn't realize as many as it was until we got our information here, and they're pretty well dotted evenly down both sides of the shore. And in response to something Kelly said about the environmental stuff, and we've had this discussion before, when you put the tanks and personnel carriers and everything at Chincoteague, it was an oil slick for like 2.5 months, and they were supposed to be prepared, I guess, by the federal government for you to put them overboard. And I do have concerns with that.
All right. I was up there the day those tanks and armored personnel carriers and tow missile launch vehicles went overboard. I didn't see the oil slick.
Were you there for the next 2.5 months, or were you there when they were deployed?
No, I was not. The preparation procedure for those vehicles was put together by Bill Muir, who's a regional oceanographer for EPA. He's out of Philadelphia. I went down to the Army Depot, or rather up to Fort Dix, to the depot where they did the preparation, where they pulled the power packs out of them. They removed the sighting equipment, things of that nature. Then those things were steam cleaned, and I crawled through each and every one of them, and the only lubricants that were left intact were the heavy, I believe they refer to it as case lube, in the tracks themselves, and the stuff is like wax. And EPA said that that posed absolutely no problem because it wasn't soluble.
Well, it was definitely a slick there. I have no problem with the fact that it was, except that there was one, and, you got the Arizona has been sunk since World War II, and it's still leaching oil. It may not leach as much the first day, and it may take a while for compounds to break down, like this heavy grease you're saying. It may not have been present when you put them overboard, but it was present for a while. It's not there no longer.
I'll be glad to contact the other programs and see if they had similar experiences. It would be good information to have.
Please do that, Mike. That'd be good. Find out. I'd like to know. Motion made and second. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. The next item 18, exception under hardship provision of Regulation 4 VAC 2950-10. Dale Denniston requests entrance into the commercial black sea bass directed fishery. Joe, how are you, man?
Hi, sir. How are you?
Good.
All right. I'll be brief. You should have before you in your evaluation packets the background will give a brief history of the exceptions that the commission has made so far. You should also have a history of